Welcome to Right Here in Mass. We're a weekly podcast that features individuals throughout the Bay State who are on our radar and should be on yours. From the Berkshires to Boston, Cape Cod and the Islands, tune in to learn about who you should know right here in Mass. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Right Here in Mass. Today's guest is Sarah McKay, the Executive Director of Misty Meadows Equine Learning Center in West Tisbury. Having grown up in Northern Ireland in a family with a long history of horse training and schooling, Sarah started riding at age 2. Her interest in community development led her to Martha's Vineyard, where she served as store manager for the Kronig's markets for over 15 years, followed by 9 years of nonprofit management experience, serving on the board and as president, and later as executive director of Island Grown Initiative. Sarah, thank you so much for being here today. Please share more about you and what you do.
Thank you, Ashley. Be great to be here. It's very exciting to be able to share the work that we do here at Misty Meadows Equine Learning Center. And for me, it's just been such a joy to bring the skills that I have gained over the years in both the profit and nonprofit world. And then tying that in with my long love and passion of working with horses, I've been able to bring that to so many people in so many different ways. It's really, really exciting.
Absolutely. And growing up in a family who has been so passionate about horses, did you ever think that you would end up in a career involving them, or was that totally unexpected?
I always hoped that I would, but family circumstances when I was a teenager precluded that. And I ended up going off to college and then starting a career and just didn't have the time or the resources to have horses in my life. So it eventually came as a surprise. But not as I expected, which is how life is often, right?
Absolutely. How did you end up finding out about the position at Misty Meadows?
Well, there really wasn't a position. The organization didn't exist. There was this beautiful property in West Tisbury that was on the market and had been a privately owned equestrian property. And as it turned out, I had a relationship with the owner through Island Grown Initiative. And one thing led to another. I was going through a career change and we met and we started talking. And lo and behold, after a little over a year, Misty Meadows Equine Learning Center, it was originally the Martha's Vineyard Community Horse Center, but the idea was birthed as a nonprofit. So in fall of 2016, we established a 501c3. Mm-hmm. And January of 2017, we started programs, and that's when I became the executive director. So in essence, we created the position, as is pretty typical with the nonprofit startups.
Yeah, that's amazing. And for our listeners who aren't from Martha's Vineyard, I'd love for you to share what Misty Meadows Equine Learning Center is and the individuals and groups that they support.
Sure. We are Equine Learning Center that offers a really diverse range of all sorts of programming. We talk about all of the work that we do is therapeutic, whether it's with a capital T or a small T, that every single experience that people have here at Misty Meadows has a therapeutic benefit. So our mission is to work with horses to transform people's lives, in essence. And our vision is to, you know, help change people's lives one horse experience at a time. And we do a broad range of programs. Martha's Vineyard is a small place. So we have, like many nonprofits and businesses that exist on this island that are successful, you have to be diverse and creative, which has been a really wonderful opportunity for us to find new ways to reach more people. So we do some very conventional things that a lot of people would be familiar with in a horse barn. We offer horseback riding lessons, mostly in a group format. But we also do a lot of other things that are centered around observing the horse and working with the horse at liberty or when they're free, so to speak. Our horses live in a herd. So we do a lot of our work by looking through the lens of the herd to better understand how their relationships work, how they communicate with each other through body language and energy, and then how that can really help us humans to be more present and aware and connected. So Our population is everything from 2-year-old kiddos who come here during the summertime for pony rides, all the way up to seniors who came from a nursing home. We had one individual who was 102 years old in a wheelchair.
Oh my gosh.
Who was able to, like, for the first time in months, their caregiver said, was having an animated, coherent conversation with one of our horses.
That's amazing.
So it's just beautiful to see all of that. We
yeah.
have a lot of returning adults who, mm-hmm. you know, had a horse experience when they were a kiddo, or maybe didn't and dreamed of it, and now in their, you know, in their 60s and 70s and sometimes older are coming back to it, which is a really wonderful thing to offer.
Absolutely. And I'm really interested in the part that you mentioned about how Misty Meadows didn't exist. You really helped to create the position and also create the nonprofit. So what was that like? I know our listeners, or some of our listeners, have an interest in starting their own nonprofits, which can be really tricky, but also really rewarding at both times. So what was that like of just going through it and determining, like you said, what sets you apart from other organizations and really helping to build it up to be what it is today?
Absolutely. And starting up a nonprofit is all of those things you mentioned. It's a big challenge, but it also can be very, very satisfying. And I think the biggest takeaway is it's definitely something that no one person should be undertaking on their own. I've been very lucky to be involved, as you mentioned, the Island Grown Initiative with another nonprofit. I went through the early stages of its growth and development, and that really helped guide me when it came to Misty Meadows and how things would be there. So the most important thing is developing a board to have that support in terms of the oversight and the governance and the guidance that the executive director and the organization really needs. And it's can be tricky to find good board members. You know, a lot of nonprofits, we have I think over 200 nonprofits here on Martha's Vineyard, which is a lot per capita. So not only do we sometimes overlap a lot with donors, but we also overlap a lot with board members. And we're all seeking those really well-known, great board members to have on our team. So yeah, having the support of the board, having a clear vision, being able to ask for help because you're never going to have all of the answers, and understanding that you're going to make some mistakes along the way. And that's part of the journey. I say, you know, give it a go, there are lots of resources and support out there these days that really make it a lot easier, and to really look for those. And build your team around people that are really, really passionate about the same thing that you are and want to learn.
Yeah. Oh, I love all those points. Those were, I think, really great things to hone in on. And two things specifically that I want to dive into a little bit deeper. One being the part that you mentioned about building a board, and which, like you said, is so important. I'm personally on a few different boards, and that's one struggle that we've continuously had for these different organizations is just building up that board of directors and volunteers with people who are diverse in their expertise and in their backgrounds, and being able to find people who can really contribute to the overall organization. So when it comes to that, do you have any advice for someone who might be looking to expand their organization's board and really being able to have some tips that they can follow and implement?
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest game changer was really finding someone who had really strong board leadership experience. We were doing really well. We had a wonderful board. But whenever we had that opportunity, it was someone that we had identified probably 4 years ago and had actually gone to him and said, hey, when your term is up on this board, would you consider having us be your go-to? And that really worked for us because then everything kind of really fell into a much more organized space. That was when we were able to develop a committee structure. And once you have strong board leadership and committee structure, a lot of really good things happen, and it really ties into the strategic planning process. So it takes away a lot of the anxiety and stress of the unknown, so to speak, whenever you have these things that are pretty set. And for me and my team, we're really looking for that so we can really focus our energy on doing the work and delivering the services and holding our mission, as opposed to constantly chasing and managing and organizing and trying to, you know, sometimes it can feel like herding cats. But whenever the structure's in place and things are working, boy, it feels really good.
Yes, absolutely. And I think one thing that's really great about board members is not only what they're able to contribute with their expertise, but also their connections. I mean, especially with a close-knit community like Martha's Vineyard, being able to have board members who are also a part of committees who can bring in people from their network they might know to have like an in-kind donation or a monetary donation or even volunteer in some aspect, I think is huge.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things for us, as we were did a strategic planning meeting recently, and as I looked around the Zoom call, there was, I think, 30 people on it. I think there were only two people out of the 30 that knew each other prior to Missy Meadows existing. Wow. So it's this other whole network and community that's been established, whether it's through our board members or through our volunteers. We have a very strong volunteer base that's really important to us. And same thing is happening there. People are developing relationships and connections through us.
Definitely. And one of the things that you also mentioned too, with being able to build up a successful nonprofit, is just asking for help, which really reminds me of one of my favorite quotes and reminders, which is, if you don't ask, the answer is always no, which I think is something that every individual, whether they're a part of a for-profit organization or nonprofit organization, it's important for them to remember. But I know some people can feel a little bit awkward or shy when it comes to outright asking someone to donate money or donate an in-kind service or being able to ask them to volunteer. But of course, it's hugely important for nonprofits to ask for stuff like that. So do you have any recommendations for anyone who might need some tips on how they can get more comfortable with that process without feeling guilty ultimately?
Yeah, I think for me, again, one of the most important things in my leadership role was having a peer network. Again, I'm really fortunate on the island. We're a pretty small community. And in terms of nonprofit leadership, I was involved in a program from the Institute of Nonprofit Practice through Tufts. So there were nine of us in a nonprofit leadership position. We went through this course together. And we would meet weekly on island, and then once a month we would go off island and meet with other cohorts from the Cape. But we just really developed this trust in each other, where we knew what we were going to talk about was going to stay between those four walls, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And we knew we could reach out to each other in confidence and ask for support and help. And just, you know, oftentimes it's just advice. Like, what do you think about this? Or I'm struggling with this and I don't know who to talk to about it. And I feel like I should have the answer. It can be pretty lonely at times. So just having people that you can turn to and not feel like you have to have all of the answers. And then I think the other thing, especially when it comes to asking people for money, we're a really great chair of our development committee. And she and I, in the beginning, when we were very, very new to this, we would sit with each other and practice. And
oh,
we would literally write a script and just practice and then sit with each other while the other one was doing it and just support each other. Mm-hmm. And that helped a lot too, of taking away that worry. And it just helped give you that little bit of push so that you didn't always end up putting that to the bottom of the list, because that's where the really uncomfortable things go, at the bottom of the list.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's great advice. And especially the part about practicing. I mean, that's something I hadn't even thought of, is just being able to write out the script, bring a friend, and just rehearse with one another. So you really get comfortable with it. And then that way it just becomes like second nature when it comes time to actually give that ask to someone.
That's right.
And shifting gears a little bit, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, you're originally from Ireland. So what inspired you to make the move from Ireland to Massachusetts?
Actually, I wanted to go to grad school, and one of my professors encouraged me to apply for a Fulbright scholarship, which I ultimately won. And my professor had connections at UMass Amherst. And one thing led to another. They had a good program that involved community development that I was really interested in. So just kind of happenstance. And then my first summer, I was supposed to have an internship with a tech firm in Worcester that fell through at the last minute. And I bugged my professor, and he came up at the last minute and said, oh, I got you an internship at the Martha's Vineyard Commission. And I'm like, I don't know where that is, but I'll go. And all of my roommates, all of my college mates were really jealous because I was getting to go to the Vineyard for the summer. And I came for the summer and I stayed. I finished my master's and that was that.
Oh, that's amazing. Do you notice any similarities between Ireland and Massachusetts? Anything that might remind you of home?
Oh, very much so. And you know, in definitely in parts of Massachusetts and in particular the island, which has a pretty diverse landscape for a small size. Up island rural towns, you know, landscape really reminds me of rural Ireland, stone walls and the rolling hills, and the ocean in the backdrop. So yeah, the place is really something that feels near and dear to me, and also the sense of community, the people. Also, it feels the island in particular, and I'm a part of Massachusetts, just a small town feel, that community friendliness. Kind of a little bit of the Yankee frugalness, if you will, that is reminiscent of when I was growing up, for sure.
Oh, I love that. And when you had moved to UMass Amherst to be able to go to school there and also eventually end up moving to Martha's Vineyard, what was that process like of just acquainting yourself with a new place and making friends and building connections when you're totally new to this environment and location?
It was a very significant culture shock for me. The school I went to in Ireland had 2,000 full-time students. UMass Amherst, I think, is around 25,000. I had geographical spatial issues. For some reason, I thought Amherst was like right next to Boston, so I'd be getting city life and everything. So I wasn't really expecting to be thrown into real rural area. So there was just a lot of cultural shocks, but I love the landscape. I love Western Mass. It's just so beautiful. And I was really, really lucky to have great folks that I was in school with and I made good friends with. So, you know, that really made, so I really enjoyed it in the end, but it was a big transition for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the positions that you also had previously was working for Kronig's Markets. So what inspired you or pushed you to make that shift for working from them to then going to the nonprofit sector?
Sure. So I actually see Bernier, the owner of Kronig, I met when I was working at the Martha's Vineyard Commission. We started working on a project together. And then I ultimately went and worked for him for over 15 years. And he was really the impetus for me diving into the nonprofit world. He was one of the founders of Island World Initiative and kind of brought me in under his wing in that organization. So that was really great. So I really, you know, initially, I really loved getting into the for-profit world and really understanding from the ground up what it took to run a business, especially on Martha's Vineyard, a successful business, I should say, especially on Martha's Vineyard, and the role of the business in the community at large as part of the fabric of the community and how much support was there from Kronig's to the community. So I really loved that. But then as I got more and more involved in the nonprofit world, I really enjoyed the being part of giving back in that way even more. And I really enjoyed bringing kind of the business skills to the nonprofit world, if you will, because that was definitely something, you know, it sometimes can be a missing piece. So that was really something that gave me a little bit of extra confidence in terms of being able to do something from the ground up and taking something on as large as this project was. So, yeah.
Yeah. And with it, I mean, with how busy you've been, how have you been able to have that work-life balance and make sure that work stays at work and that you have time for yourself to sit back and relax and almost shut off your brain when you're outside of the work zone?
Yeah, that continues to be a challenge for me, as for many nonprofit leaders. I think it's getting a little easier as I'm getting older. So I, you know, I have all the things that I enjoy doing. I love spending time in my garden at home with my husband. I have two of my own personal horses, so they demand my time and attention, so that, you know, that's kind of non-negotiable, if you will. And then just really blessed to live in such a beautiful place that literally within a couple of minutes drive, I can be on any of the most beautiful beaches that I choose. And I love to be outside in the outdoors. So that's the way that I really keep that balance going more than anything.
Love that. And with Martha's Vineyard, there for a lot of businesses, they have a seasonality to it where they kind of have to worry, depending on what they are, about all the tourists, quote unquote, that will be coming within the summer, but then also being able to accommodate for perhaps the slower winter months, like we have to do on the Cape. And so do you see that within the nonprofit, kind of that shift in busyness ultimately? And if so, how do you accommodate for that?
Yeah, you definitely do. I mean, we all, summer is summer here, whether it's donors or just the population increase in terms of the amount of activity. So yeah, that's a reality. And there's kind of a cyclical feel to it, that as there is with other parts of the island and the Cape, where things kind of don't really slow down in the fall. There is that sense of it's going to, but it doesn't really slow down until January. These days, January and February seem to be the quiet months. And you just see, you know, in the off season, there's more networking happening. There's more people working on the pieces that they just don't have time for in the summer. So whether it's, you know, projects that they want to get going before summer, there's a lot of planning that's happening for summer, for summer events, for, you know, activities that are happening, for fundraising for sure. And so, yeah, it seems to have its very specific flow that's somewhat nonprofit driven and somewhat seasonal community driven.
Right. And do you find that with your nonprofit, you've been able to expand your audience beyond just Martha's Vineyard to other parts of Massachusetts? Or do you find that the main bulk of your audience comes from the island?
I'd say in the off season, the majority of our population comes from the island. Again, a really broad, diverse range. But definitely in the summer, we reach a much broader audience with our summer camp that we do for little kiddos, with the pony rides that we offer each Saturday through the summer. And then we also, we go places. So we were part of the first Pride Parade that happened in Oak Bluffs early this summer. We were part of the Preservation Trust Flying Horses themed event, fundraiser event. We were part of the Martha's Vineyard Agricultural Fair and Harvest Fest. So at some of those events, there might be thousands of people and they're from all over. So we might not have a direct connection, but it's a way for us to bring our mission and our work into their focus, so to speak.
Right.
And then the other way that we do it is virtually, as a lot of people are. You know, thankfully, we work with horses, which are great content providers for social media and for and other platforms. So we really kind of hone in on that to keep things active and fun. And we find a lot of our folks that are seasonal really enjoy staying connected with us via social media when they're away in the off season.
I think that's a great way to retain those people, because that was going to be my next question, is making sure that how you make sure that the people who come during the summer or the busy seasons stay involved and will come back the next season and continue to go to Misty Meadows and not just do like a one-time thing ultimately.
Right. And that's where, you know, as a nonprofit, it's really important to capture information every way that you can, so that you can have a way to stay in touch and to provide something that the audience like feels has value to them, that it's just not an annoyance, so to speak. So for us, you know, all through our summer events, we'll capture information and put people on our newsletter mailing. And then we'll do some specific things, like early in the fall after school started, we sent out an email list to our summer camp parents with some really cute photos that captured the summer and some activity sheets that were themed around horses, just as a way to check in and say hi and wish their kiddos, you know, a good new school year, so to speak. So you just try to find ways that make, you know, make a difference to people and they really enjoy.
Absolutely. And one of the things that you also had mentioned, which I think is a great strategy, is being able to be at events and collaborate with other organizations in that aspect. But one thing that can be tricky is not saying yes to every opportunity that comes your way and really knowing which ones won't do you not necessarily more harm than good, but won't actually be more of a hassle than a benefit that you're getting from it. And so from being within Misty Meadows, do you have some type of strategy or process that you follow to make sure that the events are aligned with the organization and actually would make sense for you?
Yeah, and I do. I think it ties into mission alignment. And we really focus on the organizations that we already partner with or are kind of on our short list of want to partner with, so to speak, to really have that alignment. You know, for example, we lease land from Sheriff's Meadow Foundation, a local nonprofit conservation agency, and they held their annual event at Misty Meadows this summer under some massive tents, and there were 500 people on the property for a sit-down dinner, and I had an opportunity to get up and speak in front of them for like 3 minutes. So things like that can be really, really great for us to reach a whole new range of people who have a shared commitment and vision for the island, but maybe not directly involved with Misty yet.
Yeah, and just having that big reach ultimately that you can gain from it is huge, with being able to attract donors or volunteers or anyone else who wants to get involved in the nonprofit.
That's right.
And speaking of getting involved with a nonprofit, you had mentioned at the beginning of this episode that you've really focused on building out a team who's passionate, or as passionate as you are, about the work that you do in your mission. So what was your process for being able to build out a staff that can support Misty Meadows in the capacity that you need and ensure that they're really motivated and inspired in the work?
That's a great question. And it's been a little bit of a process for sure, as it is often with nonprofit startups. I think in the short answer is that we ultimately attract those people. You know, what I find is that when people have walked into the barn and spend a little bit of time kind of looking around and watching, observing what's going on, that's when we hear like, oh, this feels different. The energy feels really good. And again, I think because we work with horses, and the way that we work with horses, we're very tuned into how people are connecting energetically, where they're at. So we get a pretty good read on folks pretty fast. And you know, the horses, again, bring their piece to it. So it's been really interesting, and just, it's been lovely to see, you know, some of our folks that have started out with not necessarily being experienced instructors. And gain their certification and get really passionate about that and be really great at it. So it's just, it's great to be part of folks' professional development as well as the organizational development.
Absolutely. And does Misty Meadows do anything to support like your staff with professional development, whether it's like furthering their education or just supporting them in any other aspect?
Absolutely. We do regular, not only professional, but volunteer enrichment opportunities. So we'll bring in experts and offer those at free or nominal charge for our staff. We also provide a stipend for each staff person to use, depending on whether they're full-time or part-time, that they can go somewhere else for something that they're interested in and use those funds to help support their professional development. So yeah, that's really important to us. And it's one of the ways, you know, oftentimes, it's challenging in the nonprofit world to provide competitive salaries, if you will, and staff tends to be the biggest expense. So providing other ways to add value to help staff feel valued and important and engaged, and areas and rooms for growth for them, is really, really important.
Absolutely. And I think that's a great idea, is being able to, like you said, provide benefits or value that might be different than salary. And also, that's how you know that the people that you hire are really passionate about what you do, because they're not necessarily always in the position for money, but more so it's something that they really care about and value deeply.
That's right, for sure.
And I have to mention, this part on your website made me laugh, but anyone who goes to Misty Meadows website for their staff page, they had two different links that said two-legged members and four-legged members. And I just thought that was funny to be able to introduce the people and the horses.
Well, you know, it's been really interesting. That comes up a lot. and it often comes up when we talk to donors, because it gives people a better understanding of the four-legged really are part of our staff. And you know, their care is 24/7, 365 days of the year. We laugh, frankly, they have a better benefit package than the two-legged, in terms of their care and well-being. They get chiropractic work, they get acupuncture, they get energy work, they get all of these different things depending on what it is they need. And frankly, they deserve it, because the work that they do is actually, it's pretty hard. It can be very stressful for them, and socially, emotionally, it's really challenging for them to have to be on their best behavior with so many different people all of the time. You know, and they, when they show up here, they, or anywhere, they don't know from one situation to the next whether what they learned in the last place that they lived is going to be useful to them here. It's kind of like in a foster home. They're all thrown in together. They don't get to be in their family units the way that most people do. So, you know, we laugh about it, but we really do look at them as our four-legged staff for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you bring a new horse in, I imagine that you probably give them some time to get acquainted with, like you said, the new area and the dynamics before they start working with people who come in. Is that right?
Absolutely. It's quite a transition period for them. It was really interesting. This past fall, we had a program that I was able to instruct with our local community services program with a veterans group. And it was a small group of veterans, and the program happened to overlap with the arrival of a new horse on the property. So for the 4 weeks that they came, each week they got to see the little incremental progress that we were making in terms of integrating this one horse into a group with three other horses. And it was just really, really cool for them to be able to be part of that and see it. But it is, it takes time, and things change within the herd dynamically on a regular basis, just like relationships change with us humans. So that can be fascinating. It can be challenging at times as well, but yeah, they're horses.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually going back to your website, because this made me think of this, but one thing I also noticed on your website is that it was under construction and going through a little bit of a facelift. So is that actually one of the projects that you're working on during the slower season, like you mentioned earlier in this episode?
Absolutely. You know, I think keeping your website fresh and updated is a challenge for all of us. So making a commitment and making sure that someone has that on their to-do list is really important. You know, and we try to work with somebody who can do the technical work. And then we're blessed to have one of our board members who's a professional photographer. So we have great images. And one of the things that we're trying to add is a little bit more of shopping cart commerce side of things, because we have one of our miniature horses actually paints. So some of his original artwork is available on our website for sale. And then we have some other great ideas for simple little merchandising and or print on demand things to add.
That's really interesting that you're finding ways to be innovative and offer things that aren't directly related to working with the horses one-on-one ultimately, and just getting creative with what you can offer to people.
Yeah. And that's the great thing is like think out of the box. And I look to, I'm also really lucky. I get to work with some teenagers that I've worked with now for some of them almost 6 years. So I started working with them in middle school, and now they're all starting to graduate and go off to college. And they're part of our teen advisory board. So they actually meet as a board, and we brainstorm a lot, and they're really great about offering ideas and suggestions of things that will reach more people and are innovative and attractive to a younger audience as well.
I think that's an amazing idea, because in my full-time job, I own a marketing agency, and that's something that some of our clients who have a younger audience themselves struggle with. Is they're like, us being in our 50s and 60s, we don't necessarily know how to market to people who might be in their teens or early 20s. And so I love that you bring in individuals that you already work with to be able to get their advice and take what they're seeing and what they're looking for and apply it to what you're going to be offering.
That's right. That's right.
Awesome. Sarah, this has been such an awesome episode. And I have two last questions that I'd like to ask you, with one being living on Martha's Vineyard. What are your favorite local businesses to support?
Oh, that's a great question. There are a lot of them, and hopefully I won't forget. Kronig's Market, obviously, is a really big, important local one. SBS, which is our local grain store. You know, obviously with horses, that's something that we depend on a lot. Also Morning Glory Farm, local farm and farm stand, and their family have been, their kiddos have been part of our programming since the beginning. Middletown Nursery, local nursery that does some great things for us, helps us out during the season with some plants and other things like that. John Keane excavation. When we need some material to keep our run in shelters and our horses dry and safe, they're always there to help us. So those are the ones that pop right into my mind right off the bat.
Love it. And where can people find you and Misty Meadows online in case they'd like to connect further?
Sure. Our website is mistymeadowsmv.org. You can follow us on Facebook and on Instagram as well, for sure. If you want to send us an email, info@mistymeadowsmv.org is our email address. You can always call the barn. Someone will get back to you within a few hours. Our phone number is 508-338-7198. And then if folks happen to be on the vineyard and they just want to stop by, we are open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5 p.m. And we are right off of Old Carney Road in West Tisbury, which is right next to our friends, I should have mentioned earlier, our other neighbor friends, the Granary Gallery, which is a beautiful art gallery right at the end of our driveway. And we do a lot of fun events together. So they're another great neighbor and supporter. So yeah, you can drive right onto the property, take a walk around. If someone's available, we often have volunteers who are available to give tours, introduce folks to the horses. You don't need to make an appointment.
Perfect. And I will link all that information in the show notes in case our listeners missed it so they can click through and connect with you further from there. But Sarah, thank you so much again for being a guest on today's show.
Thank you very much. This was wonderful. Thanks, Ashley.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Right Here in Mass. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social media, and share our podcast with your network. See you next week.